Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the 1994 movie directed by Kenneth Branagh. That's kind of the companion piece to Bram Stoker's Dracula that we talked about last week.
Yeah, we are.
And Brother Drew, you had said that it turns out you had never seen this movie before.
Never.
So what did you think of Bram Stoker's Dracula, especially after watching, what did you think of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, especially after watching Bram Stoker's Dracula?
I thought Mary Shelley's Frankenstein was actually really terrible, really awful, painful, ugly to look at, a waste of Robert De Niro, a waste of pretty much anybody. I think the only reason this movie even exists is so that Kenneth Branagh had a reason to be shirtless a lot. Like, he must have really been working out and been really proud of himself for this movie.
Oh, I would be proud of myself if I looked like that. Faux show.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't look bad. It's just, It was noticeably awkward.
Well, you'll be happy to find out that, you know who else shares your view? Pretty much everybody who is in this film. Except for Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, yeah, He's still ride or die for this movie?
I think so, yeah. This also happened to be the movie where he wanted his wife, Dame Emma Thompson, to be the Elizabeth character.
His sister wife?
Yes.
Okay.
It's also the movie where he cheated on her with Helena Bonham Carter, his sister wife.
Oh.
Yeah.
She wasn't with Tim Burton at this time?
I don't believe so, no. Yeah, I'm pretty sure she was the third wheel, and not her fault, but that's the marriage broke up upon this movie. On the shores of this movie. By the way, another movie that involves a ship in an interesting way, and lots of costumery.
Yes.
Also a period piece kind of costume drama. And it occurs to me, and this is the first time I had thought this thing, that Victor Frankenstein was a contemporary of Alexander Hamilton. Well, maybe he was a little bit younger, but he was, I mean, you have to do the math, but when did Hamilton die?
Late 1700s, early 1800s?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, so I think maybe Frankenstein died before Hamilton. Because, at least in this movie, in 1794 is where he is his dying. So, yeah, wild.
Yeah, what did you think of this movie?
Well, I'll confess that I have tried several times, but I have not made it through Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the novel. Because after you got through the first part of, like, how galvanism... she kind of glosses over the science, but kind of gives you a little bit of science to think about, because the movie isn't about the science. The book is not about the science. The book is about the whole idea of man creating, you know, a man acting like God, blah, 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 consequences. So my understanding, having not read the whole novel, is that this actual adaptation is probably pretty close to the novel. It actually is deserving of the title Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Because it's not Hollywood's Frankenstein. You know, it's not Boris Karloff as Frankenstein. And it's got a lot of, like Dracula, it has a lot of ground to cover, this movie. Unlike Dracula, there was plenty of special effects, computer effects. But, I don't know. I thought that the parts that were, like, supposed to be the most profound, the heaviest, were done pretty well. You know, the whole, like, the last speech between, what do they call him? The sharp-featured man and Frankenstein? That's what they called the monster.
Oh.
Yeah, they never refer to him as a monster, or obviously they don't call him Frankenstein. But yeah, I thought that last speech was interesting. I thought it was well done, actually. And I thought, in a weird way, I think Robert De Niro did a pretty good job. He was working hard on this movie, so he did some acting, which I thought was great.
Sure.
you didn't buy it?
No.
Okay.
No, he seemed... I mean, he didn't have a lot to do. I mean,
no,
he couldn't. Sure. He couldn't really. He didn't have a lot of dialogue, and he, because he was under so much makeup, it's not like he could even do like just kind of silent face acting, which I think he's really good at.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really think he was wasted in this.
Yeah,
movie.
I mean, he was kind of unrecognizable as Robert De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so you're right. I mean, with the fact that he wasn't really doing any kind of, he wasn't being eloquent. Or giving a fiery performance. Or actually, De Niro doesn't really usually give a fiery performance, at least lately. He gives more of a subdued performance, right?
Yeah.
He's the anti-Al Pacino.
and the monster is supposed to have like this menacing physicality to him, which I do not think came across in this movie.
No, no. The fact that they had to use camera angles and stuff.
Yeah.
Because Robert De Niro's not like a huge tall guy.
And maybe launch him out of a catapult at one point.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, there was some of that. Some of like maybe John Eric Hexum Voyager level acting.
Yes.
But I have to tell you, I was impressed by one actor in particular. John Cleese.
Oh, yeah. He was
unrecognizable and good.
Yeah, he was kind of in his own movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, ready to dive into Mary Shelley's? So, you didn't like it at all?
I really didn't. Uh-huh. I really didn't. Yeah. You know, Helena Bonham Carter's really hit or miss for me. Like, she's great in Fight Club. She's really great in the Harry Potter movies. But, like, when she's going on full Tim Burton kind of weirdo, I don't really enjoy her. She's on the latest season of The Crown, and she's so good in that.
She was good in The King's Speech, remember?
Yeah.
Just a straight role. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's really good.
I think I'd mentioned before that, to me, she strikes me a lot as an Amy Sedaris type, where give her a pair of fake teeth and she is gung-ho. Like,
yes.
Like, give her a character where she can have a hunchback.
Yeah. So I think, much like De Niro, she's kind of wasted in this movie because she's kind of she's the wife on the other end of the telephone at some point, and then at other points she's just the damsel.
Yes.
And then at the end, they give her the fake teeth.
Exactly, yes. Which it didn't last long enough, I think. I mean, it did, and I think it was effective. I actually did like her as the creature's wife or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know what took me away from the movie a little bit, or distracted me, I guess, was the fact that his best friend was Amadeus.
Yes. Yeah. Like, same costuming.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he went right from the set. I was waiting for F. Murray Abraham to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I don't think I've ever seen that movie all the way through.
I've never seen it at all. Didn't even know F. Murray Abraham was in it.
He's the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Salieri, I think.
Oh, he's Mozart.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, no, Tom Hulce, he walked off the set of Amadeus and walked right onto this set. Also, this movie opens with an actor who I always forget exists. That would be Aidan Quinn.
Yes, I thought it is mind-boggling that there's a movie that has scenes where Aidan Quinn is acting with Robert De Niro.
Exactly, yes.
So in my mind, they're like two actors who do not travel in the same... They never are in the middle of the Venn diagram.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, see except also...
for this movie.
Like Dermot Mulroney.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
And for the same reason, I mean, you know, I'm not knocking Aidan Quinn.
No, he's good.
They were trying to make him like a teen idol movie star at one point. Never really took off. Kind of like Zac Efron, if that makes sense.
He played like a reluctant assassin in like a Jason Bourne ripoff, I think, in the early 90s.
Where did he start? I mean, I don't want to look it up, actually. I'm too lazy to look it up. But he was some sort of... like I remember people I worked with swooning over him when he was a young, dashing Irish actor.
He was in Legends of the Fall, right?
Oh,
with Brad Pitt and Anthony Hopkins?
Okay, that must have been it, yeah. Yeah, well, in this movie, he stars as a troubled... a captain of a ship that is trying to reach the North Pole. And they get trapped in some ice, and there's going to be a mutiny, and he is single-minded in getting to the pole, no matter how many people have to die for it, because he wants to be immortal in history. It's his name to be immortal, which is not subtle in the way that it also ties together with Victor Frankenstein, who tries to play God.
Yeah, look, I blame Kenneth Branagh. Everybody in this movie is acting at 11.
Yes, that is true. Also, again, it's hard not to compare this to Dracula since we saw them both in the same week. But this is, again, a pretty good-looking movie.
Oh, I disagree.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think this movie looks like trash.
I don't know. I like the sets.
This looks like a TV movie.
Well, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like sets.
That's true, yes.
It looks like it's on a theater stage.
Again, yes, absolutely.
I mean, the Frankenstein home in Geneva with that huge staircase with the not OSHA-certified railing.
Yes, I did notice that. It's like, oh no, I could never go on that staircase.
Yes. Yeah, it looked like it's something you would roll onto the stage for the next scene.
True. You're absolutely right about that, yeah.
The Arctic scene? You can see the plywood in the background.
Well, and it was very convenient at the end when the ice broke up and then suddenly there was no ice anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, this is, you have to... And okay, so it's not in my notes. Yeah,
the ice was breaking up because they were shaking the camera. It's like some Star Trek level effects.
Well, what about the steampunk tub full of Jello?
The amniotic fluid.
Yeah,
gross.
It's totally gross. Yeah. And all that slipping around is just all real because they couldn't get their footing in that scene because they're walking on Jello.
Yeah, some naked Robert De Niro covered in, like, goopy Vaseline.
Yeah, well, and the suit that he was in, the latex suit, like, mm-hmm. ripped and tore and stuff because of all the falling down. So they had to, like, cut and show it at weird angles. So you really did not like this movie. I love it. Ah.
No, that's why I thought... Well, okay, it didn't help that the transfer that we watched was a 4x3
yes.
cropping.
Yeah.
I assume that's just a DVD thing and that the movie was actually shot in widescreen.
I'm thinking so.
Or maybe not. Was this a made-for-TV movie that they somehow threw into theaters? I don't know. I mean, it seemed like the cast was too big for it to be a TV movie.
I think
you're right. But it had all the feelings of a TV movie. And I'm sorry, I don't want to talk you out of liking this movie, but except that it was really, really bad.
Well, it's no, yeah, you're not going to talk me out of liking it. Cause, and again, I didn't necessarily even like it. I just think it was actually, it tried to be a more serious movie than Dracula tried to be. It tried to be more true to the novel than the Dracula movie. And you know, Coppola was supposed to direct this movie too.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, you know, it wouldn't have been worse. I will say, the movie I thought I was watching really was a TV movie that I'd seen, I want to say maybe even on TNT, was a 1992 version of Frankenstein.
And who did that star?
Starring Patrick Bergen as the doctor and Randy Quaid as the creature.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. I think that was probably rushed through because of Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, it came out right after it, I think.
Yeah.
The next summer.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, okay, so diving in, we see the ship's captain, which, you know, usually, as we're used to, you don't usually get that part of the story, the fact that it all ends up in the Arctic. Although I think in the novel, he's actually going to try, his intention was to go to like South America or something, some tropical area. But either way, the creatures was going to go away from humans. So in 1794, Captain Walton, Aidan Quinn, leads a troubled expedition to reach the North Pole, and their ship is trapped in ice off the Arctic Sea. The crew discovers a man, Victor Frankenstein, Kenneth Branagh from Dead Again, Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, and Dunkirk. Only two of those movies, only one of those three movies highlight Kenneth Branagh's serious performances. Because Dead Again, it was strictly trash. And Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, he was a cartoon villain.
Is Kenneth Branagh, is it a real thing that the best movie he's ever directed is Thor?
Well, okay, I haven't seen the Kenneth Branagh Shakespeare adaptations. Like Hamlet. Like, I've seen the Mel Gibson Hamlet, but I have not seen the Kenneth Branagh, like, four-hour Hamlet or whatever it is. He's supposed to be good in that. That's how he became, known as a serious director, I think.
All right, maybe I don't say this as a pejorative, but maybe he really should just stick to Shakespeare.
And again, I don't have any evidence that that is good. It's just well-received. So, Victor tells the story. He grows up in Geneva with his adopted sister, Elizabeth, another Elizabeth, Helena Bonham Carter, if we know from Fight Club, Novocaine, 2001's Planet of the Apes, Terminator Salvation, and The King's Speech, who would become the love of his life.
Sorry, you skipped over the part where the monster kill all the dogs in the Arctic.
Yeah, the dogs take off after the monster, who we haven't met yet, by the way. We don't see the monster until like 45 or 50 minutes into this movie.
Right. But you sure hear him moan.
Oh, yeah. But Kenneth Branagh tells Aidan Quinn, don't worry about the dogs, they're already dead.
That's a good line.
Yeah, it is.
You know what would have been a better choice?
What?
To just cut away on that line and not actually have to show us the dogs being murdered.
Oh, no. Hearing the screams of dogs and seeing dog carcasses.
Maybe a couple distant screams would have been creepier, but this is a movie that does not have the confidence to be subtle.
True. Or I think maybe it's not the desire.
Yeah.
Everything needs to be spelled out in Sharpie, as if it were the president's notes.
I did not want the dogs to die. I did not want the dogs to die.
Yes, I wanted the monster to do the right thing. Okay, so before he leaves for university at Ingolstadt, Victor's mother dies giving birth to brother William. Traumatized by grief afterward, Victor vows on his mother's grave that he'll find a way to conquer death. Victor has very grandiose ideas.
You know how you could tell that his mother was a warm, loving mother?
How so?
Because she rolled around on the floor with him and laughed.
A little bit of cinematic shorthand. cheap?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so you really do hate this movie. It's
a very nice way of putting it.
Yeah. He is shunned by his peers because Victor Frankenstein, again, maybe Kenneth Branagh plays him too well, but Victor Frankenstein is a pompous jackass.
Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off. Ian Holm plays his father.
And he's always great. But yeah. It almost seems like he's trying to be comic relief. But it's not a good look because his character doesn't have a lot of comedy, especially at the end. Maybe it's just because he's got a friendly face.
Because yeah, I mean, in the beginning, there's a lot more comedy, like when he's walking down that weird staircase covered in blood. That was hilarious.
Yeah, I guess with his wife dying, it's not great. But anyway, yeah, actually, the real comic relief is his friend Henry Clerval, Tom Hulse, who is in medical school with Frankenstein, but is squeamish and can't get through Gross Anatomy. So they meet Schmael August Waldman, played by John Cleese, from A Fish Called Wanda, The World Is Not Enough, Die Another Day, and Rat Race.
Yeah, of all the people in this movie, John Cleese is the one who goes understated.
Yes.
Even though they gave him weird teeth.
Yeah, to great effect, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing how weird teeth and some long hair suddenly, I mean, I didn't think of Monty Python at all. I thought he was nearly unrecognizable.
Yeah, no, he was really good. He actually, like, brought a lot of sort of the existential horror to this movie.
Yeah.
You know, the really grappling with the moral dilemma.
Yes, and the point of this movie is to grapple with the moral dilemma. So maybe all of the gruesomeness of it, I mean, some of it's important to have. But this is kind of an over-the-top horror movie trying to be something very profound.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's succeeding, actually. But the professor has all these notes on how to create life, but tells him not to use them because they can create an abomination. And there's a while performing vaccinations, Waldman is murdered by a stubborn patient who is later hanged in the village square. And using that body and a leg from another student who's died from cholera and Waldman's brain, Victor builds a creature based on the professor's notes. He's got electric eels. He has lightning. Actually, in the first part, there wasn't really lightning, like a lightning storm like in the original Frankenstein movie. And I don't think he actually utters the word, "It's alive!" Although, he has every right to. It's a good line.
He did say live, though.
Yeah, he does. Yes. But, of course, he is a maniac, a crazed person, this Victor Frankenstein is. And so he is basically shutting out his friends and family over this obsession. And it drives Elizabeth away, blah, 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 stops answering her letters. So she comes to Ingolstadt and he can't let her know what he's doing behind the closed doors. And he hasn't let Henry know. And it's all very complicated. In a mini series type thing, Elizabeth and Henry would have had like a meet cute kind of will they or won't they relationship. Because they'll be thrust together for a while without Victor, because Victor's all off being crazy.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's her brother.
That's true, yeah. They grew up as brother and sister, so yeah. But Victor gives this creature life. Then regrets his decision. Well, he gives him life and then thinks he has killed him by accident.
Mm-hmm.
But when he finds out that he's not dead, then he's very scared. And he does a lot of dramatic journaling where he says that he's created massive birth defects and abomination. You know, this must never be done again.
Yes. Also not subtle that this being who was brought back to life only to be sort of killed again and then resurrected was actually in the Christ pose.
Oh, yeah.
While strung up in chains.
Sure. Yeah. It's, yeah, not subtle for sure. So Victor gives the creature life, blah, blah, blah. Robert De Niro from Heat, Wag the Dog, Jackie Brown, and Red Lights then steals the coat and is driven away by townspeople when he tries to steal the food. So this is where we get to the part that It's interesting in the novel, I'm sure, but it is the slowest, draggiest part of this movie. And there must have been a cleverer way to get through all of this. So Henry goes back and is going to get married to Elizabeth. Victor goes back and is getting married to Elizabeth. And they're going to have Henry come and live in the same town, be in the same practice as Victor, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's happy, except, of course, the creature escapes and ends up in the wilderness and then lives in a family's barn. A poor family of farmers during a rough winter, and the patriarch of the family is a blind old man who sort of befriends him and he learns to read and all this other stuff. So, yeah, it's great. So, I think in the novel, the creature becomes super articulate. In this movie, not so much, but, you know, at least he has thoughts. So, by the way, he learns how to read Victor's journal and finds out that he's an abomination. And he vows to meet his creator and maybe kill him, but then he gets a better idea.
He calls out for revenge.
Yes. Yeah. He almost takes a sword and plunges it into a big stone cross that then gushes blood. One of those things.
Yeah. So there's... I don't know how else to do this. There's a scene. It's almost a Benny Hill style scene where this family that he's really creeping on for a long time starts to believe that he is what, the spirit of the forest.
Yes.
So they leave treats out for him, like Santa Claus style. And it's the most preposterous scene because as they're putting treats outside the door, he's like poking around the corner, like almost with like the silly, like upside down smile De Niro face, like, and then like, as soon as they go back in the kitchen, he kind of like tiptoes over almost like in a like Roadrunner cartoon to see what was left for him.
Like you expect to hear the sound effect from Fred Flintstone bowling?
He didn't even wait.
Like, oh, no.
He was walking while they were closing the door. This is... He wants to stay hidden because he believes he's so hideous that he doesn't want to be around people.
But really, any of the children, if they just looked up and to the right, would have seen him.
Yes. As a ridiculous scene.
Yes, of course. But we have to set up that he is his heart is warming to this family, only to have his heart broken because of a misunderstanding, a Three's Company type misunderstanding involving a landlord. A Mr. Furley type, really.
Yeah.
More of a Mr. Roper, actually.
No, like the same kind of acting, too.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. They hired Robert De Niro in this movie.
Well,
to be in this movie so that he could peer through a peephole and go, friend.
Well, he, you know, you missed the part where he's like, come and knock on our door. Mm-hmm. We've been waiting for you. Or, you know, putting on the Ritz. Anyway. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I think he must have really wanted to do this role, right? He must have gone into deep Robert De Niro method acting.
I can imagine the pitch given to him.
Something like, Bob, this is a chance of a lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, you get to play this creature who is trying to figure out whether or not he has a soul. And he lives a solitary existence. And he just wants to eventually... you know, have somebody to live with. He just wants a companion, and he's driven to utter madness because he's so lonely and doesn't know who he is.
And he shows more
and you get
humanity.
And you get to portray all of that with very little dialogue.
Yes. And makeup that will actually obscure most of your face.
Yes.
In fact, you can only act with one eye. So it's kind of complicated. Yeah. Yeah. Bobby, come on. You can do it.
And we'll write this awesome scene for you where you get to stand in front of a green screen. We'll project a fire behind you and you'll get to yell, Frankenstein! We'll put that on the trailer and everything. It'll be great.
Oh, the best, though, is the fire at the end. So now is where it gets kind of dirty. because once the creature
talking about like the Flash Gordon style special effects.
No, I'm talking about the actual like murders that happen. Like he goes and crushes the younger brother, like kills the younger brother slowly. He recounts and frames Justine, the poorer girl who is being like abused by what her mother or her the mistress of the house or something. Basically, a handmaiden is then framed
and executed.
And executed, yes. And he demands that that Frankenstein make him a bride or a companion, you know, to procreate. They can live together, and Frankenstein's like, sure, I can make that happen, I guess, as if you leave my family alone, the rest of my family, and you, like, killed my brother. Because the monster says, or the creature, whatever, the sharp-featured man says, you will do this for me, or I will end you and your family. Something like that. So, and part of this, Victor has this thing where Victor's very obsessed until the very end, in which case he kind of, he pulls out. Like, both times, he's like, oh, this is a good idea. That was a bad idea. Just stops it at the very end. Like, that's not great. By the way, the fact that Justine was grabbed by an angry mob of villagers was just pretty intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially since she was innocent. A little bit of Treat Williams hair action going on, but oh well. At least there wasn't a sad song at the end. It made me cry. So, Victor begins gathering the tools he needs to create life, but when the creature insists that he uses Justine's body to make his companion, Victor breaks his promise, and the creature exacts revenge, strangling Baron Frankenstein, the dad, and tearing out Elizabeth's heart.
Still beating heart,
yes. By the way, we did have this meeting, I think it was before this, right, where Frankenstein has to go up into the glacier and have the meeting with the creature. It's like, oh, come on. You've already given us a ship in the middle of the North thing. Why do you have to have this meeting on a glacier? Maybe it's straight from the book, but it was unnecessary.
It's a sea made of ice, Eric.
I guess.
Sea made of ice.
So, at this point, because the creature has killed Elizabeth, Victor races home to try to bring her back to life. So he stitches Elizabeth's head onto Justine's body, and she wakes as a reanimated creature.
Yes, but because he not only ripped out her heart, but then like bonked her face as he like toppled her off the bed, bonked her face, and caught her hair on fire.
Yes.
She's a mess.
She is a mess.
I mean, granted, it's her head on another person's body, but like her face is a mess. She's got like the big stitches over one eye and everything and no hair. And
yeah, arguably Justine would have been fine for this purpose, right? All of her organs were intact.
Yeah. Well, no, Frankenstein was making her for him.
Well, I realize that.
Yeah.
But even so, couldn't you just take in Elizabeth's brain out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, good point.
There'd be, you know, you'd at least have the comely features of Justine.
Yeah.
But again, it's not who you want. It's, you know, the love of your life or whatever. Yeah, instead, you get the Amy Sedaris hunchback with the... It really was a soap opera moment where she's... the reanimated Elizabeth is just trying to figure shit out. And the monster's like, the creature. I don't know why I'm thinking I have to like, as if I'm being somehow monster-phobic. don't call him a monster. Normalize reanimated corpses. The Revenant. So the creature's like, she's mine. And Frankenstein's like, no, she's the love of my life. And she's like, I'm my own person. Time's up, gentlemen. And also realizes that she's horrible looking. And so she decides to set herself and the entire Castle Frankenstein on fire in a very lush CGI fire thing. They spent a lot of money on the CGI fire. Or maybe not. But There was a lot of it. It was over the top CGI fire. Like, in a way that they basically dumped one, like, what is it, like, kerosene lamp or something? Or even just a lamp oil lamp on her head, set herself on fire, and she ran through one hallway. But by the end of the running through the hallway, the entire castle has flames coming out of every window.
Yeah, it was almost like a self-destruct sequence.
Yes. But now we go to the Arctic Circle. And Victor is telling Walton that he's been pursuing this his creation for months to kill him. And then he dies. Frankenstein dies on the boat. And Walton explains that, oh, he's a crazy person. Until he hears the monster weeping over Victor's body, confessing that for all his hatred, he still considers Victor to be his father. So the crew then decides, so they're going to have a funeral. Because, you know, festivity, whatnot. They were about to mutiny and probably string up the captain, eat him. Especially since the dogs weren't available to either escape on or eat because the monster killed them. But as they prepare the funeral pyre, the ceremony is interrupted when the ice around the ship cracks for reasons.
It doesn't just crack. It explodes.
It does. It explodes.
Like, the earth is angry.
And Walton invites the creature to stay with the ship, but the creature insists on remaining with the pyre. He takes the torch and burns himself alive with Victor's body. Walton, having seen the consequences of Victor's obsession, orders the ship to return home. So Walton ultimately is a loser in this whole thing. He goes back a failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, as his stated goal, he's a failure. Obviously, as an adventurer, you get to get points just for adventuring, right? But still. Although he still has those beautiful Irish blue eyes and the lovely Aidan Quinn voice. So, you know, he's still got that. He's got the hair, too, from the early 90s. So, unlike Absolutely. Keanu Reeves' hair. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Not a fan, you say.
Can I digress into a bit of a personal story that
Please.
I promise is going to be related to this movie?
Doesn't even have to be. Go it to
does.
It.
It does, though.
Okay.
It's just, it's not to the, it's not a compliment to this movie.
Okay.
A couple months ago, I was playing around with my children, we're just kind of wrestling around, and they love it when they pretend to beat me up and I pretend to let them. Although sometimes they hit really hard. Sorry, that's just an aside.
Yeah.
they're getting bigger. Yeah. They can cause damage now. But one of the times they kind of had me, I was on the floor. We kind of have a U-shaped couch, and I was on the floor, and they kind of pinned me in the corner, and they were kind of jumping on me, and I finally was like, okay, enough, you win. And my youngest daughter was like, yeah, we beat you up. And I was like, okay, you beat me up. And then my oldest daughter went, yeah, crack an egg on it. Ka-ka! And she walked away. It's like, what?
wait, crack what an egg on it? Ka-ka?
Yeah, I was like, what just happened? And she said that and she walked away like a boss. And I had no idea what had just happened to me. I could not stop laughing. It was so out of nowhere. I could not understand. I come to find out later, there's a movie that they've been watching called Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Ah, okay.
I don't know if you've seen it.
I have not. I'm familiar with the Teen Titans cartoon.
Yeah, it's actually very funny.
Yeah.
But there's a plot in the movie where Robin wants his own superhero movie. So there's a very funny song that he sings about his own superhero movie. And in that song, he talks about having his own awesome catchphrase, which is crack an egg on it. Ka-ka! So that's where they got it. So when I heard that from the movie, I got to laugh all over again. But because, it, you know, it's Teen Titans Go to the Movies is funny because it's a kid's cartoon, but it's also... a like
savage satire of superhero movies. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you'll find that the Teen Titans cartoon, it's kind of like Fairly Odd Parents is like this too, where it's for kids, but it's got a lot of stuff back in there for adults too.
Yeah. There's another part of that movie where they're trying to cheer up Robin. So they sing a song. And I think the song is called something like Super Upbeat Motivational Song. It's like the title of the song. My daughters did not notice this, but I, again, could not stop laughing because after the first verse, it's like a musical style where it starts off kind of slow. And then after the first verse, it like gets like into a huge ballad.
Yes.
When it gets to the ballad part, the voice switches from the character's voice who had been singing to Michael Bolton. And it's great. And, you know, Michael Bolton's a great singer.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's very obviously Michael Bolton's voice at that point.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious. You know, and again, the kids aren't going to get it, but I found it hilarious.
Yeah.
Anyway, I share that story because there was a scene in this movie where Victor Frankenstein climbed a glacier to go meet his abomination that he created. And he pulled out his two pistols to wait for him to kill him. And out of nowhere, Robert De Niro, who's like probably like 65.
And 5 foot six.
Yes. Is hurled through the air at the camera. And I think we're meant to believe that he leapt from behind a snow-covered hill and onto Victor Frankenstein in a surprise attack. But it was so laughable and so awkward that after that scene, I expected him, while Victor Frankenstein was sliding down this weird ice slide.
Yes.
I expected him to stand there confidently with his hands on his hips, looking down and go, "Crack an egg on it. Caca."
Well, yeah, and while you bring that up, that ice slide thing must have been expensive. It's like, why? Surely. That was the whole unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, you know. There's nothing about that whole part of the movie that was necessary.
Yeah. Yeah,
he could have accosted him in the field and given him the same threat.
Yep. Yeah, that's the thing. You're right. I like this movie better than you did. But I do have to admit that, it's got all the things working against it that I mentioned before, that it's a costume drama period piece. It's not even like the bodice ripper that even Dracula. Dracula was more sexy than this in this movie. Although there was an obligatory sex scene between, that actually I think had nipples in it too. Male nipples, with Kenneth Branagh. And,
his nipples were in 80% of the movie.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. But again, you know, he's did a lot of nipple work. I get it. Mm-hmm. Nipple day at the gym. But it felt long. It drug in a lot of places that it didn't need to. There's a lot of story to tell. Keep it moving, people. At least Dracula kept it moving for the most part.
Yeah. Can you imagine Bram Stoker's Dracula, estimated budget in 1992, $40 million.
Okay.
What do you think the estimated budget of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein was just 2 years later?
It's got to be some wild number, but I'm going to say I'm going to actually err on the side of reasonableness. 2 years later, I'd say they gave this movie a $55 million budget.
Too high. $45 million.
Oh, okay.
This movie had a higher budget than Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I could tell where it went to. It went to Jell-O and steampunk bathtubs.
Yeah. What else? Nothing.
Well, the ice slide.
Sure.
Yeah. Some pretty grand locations, I think.
Yeah, they must have had a huge wooden recorder budget.
Yeah. Well, also, the glacier climbing budget was pretty high. Remember, there's no drones back in those days. You had to fly a plane over that. Yeah, disappointing in that. I wonder how much Kenneth Branagh paid himself, though, to be director and star.
I hope, for his sake, it was about $43 million.
Exactly. Well, of which Dame Emma Thompson got half in the settlement. Yeah. So, yeah. This, sadly, it was a disappointment.
Mm-hmm. It's brutal. This movie was brutal. I was mad. I was mad at myself.
Well, like,
why did I recommend this? This is terrible.
Yeah, it's we've seen better horror movies, faux show.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's a strange, inartful segue to some housekeeping, but I don't think I had mentioned on the pod before that my daughter's broken foot turns out to be healing on its own, does not require surgery, which was, was a great, great piece of news. Because literally last Thursday, there was a big long day where she had to go to, she was supposed to go, she went to school and then Kelly picked her up early so she could go to the orthopedist office and they were going to take the cast off, look at it, and then they were going to have surgery the next day. And then after that, she was going to go after the Thursday appointment with the orthopedist, she was going to go to do a choir performance at Barnes & Noble for a fundraiser for the school. And then come home and sleep and get up the next morning and have foot surgery. But turns out she didn't need the foot surgery. And also, it was our first, like, ice snow day or whatever. I guess it was an ice day. So they canceled all the after-school activities, including the choir thing. So it was a nice sigh of relief. Although, it turns out she was probably not excited that she had to go to school on Friday. And I think she had convinced herself she got the Friday off to have surgery. No, you get to go to class on Friday, kiddo.
Still a better choice.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, yeah, granted, I guess there's still some healing to do. She's still in this boot for another 4 weeks, and I bet you she's going to need, like, a walking cast or a walking boot or something for a while afterward. But, hey, if it repairs itself correctly on its own, yes. Yeah. We have made all of our adjustments that we need to as far as making our life one weight-bearing leg and a scooter kind of work for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, although we still have to go and renew our handicap parking permit. Let me tell you, being now the owner of a handicap parking permit that, by the way, I would never use if I wasn't with Journey at a place like snowing. Like, we don't even park in the handicap spot if we don't need to because it turns out there's not enough of them. I mean, some places have fine amount, but like some place like a Walmart or a big store, sometimes there's not a lot of them. And you know what they don't have around handicap parking places? Cart returns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Never. There's never around. So I guess what do you do? I guess you load up everything onto your back of your wheelchair or, you know, because, you know, the one thing you could do that seems to work every other place in the parking lot is just abandon your cart right there.
Yeah.
But it kind of defeats the purpose of having all that space.
Like a monster.
Yeah, like a monster. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And even though there's definitely a side of the car that is much easier to get in and out of. So if you have the option of parking in a van accessible space, even better. But, oh, if there's any chance of somebody with a wheelchair who's going to need that space, we're not going to park there because we could squeeze around between two cars. It's mostly a big, long parking lot full of snow that it becomes problematic. Because if you have a van that you need to get your wheelchair out of and you don't have a van accessible parking space, you don't get to get out of your car.
Yep.
So, yeah. So people that abandon the carts in that space that's marked for van accessibility, yeah, don't do that. That's being a jackass. And it's lessons from somebody who's has a temporary, slightly disabled child.
Is she going to have to go to physical therapy once she gets her foot finally free of all encumbrances?
Probably. Yeah, I think she probably would have to because it's been a while. It'll be like 2 months when it's all over, I think. And actually, they've made some adjustments, like for field trips. She's got two field trips, one of which she's going to the Native Heritage Center, and Kelly's just going to drive her, like be a chauffeur and kind of, or a chaperone, but basically take Journey, because getting on and off the bus will be a pain in the ass with her scooter and whatnot.
Yeah.
Because she can't do, there's no weight bearing on that one foot. So she can't, and because it's not in a cast, so it's pretty much on her, like on her honor, she's actually kind of treating it seriously. Because she was pretty much walking on that cast by the end of it. But the walking boot is not nearly as restrictive as the cast. So therefore, she could probably bend her foot and break things a lot easier. So Kelly's going to drive her to the Native Heritage Center. But there's also like a Beauty and the Beast thing or whatever coming up. And at the Performing Arts Center. She's going to just bail on that one. Because she doesn't like the idea of, like, the handicap seating arrangements at the PAC are great unless you're with a group of students, which who knows how that is. And so, you know, they're probably just going to bail on that day. Anyway, we'll work it out. Things are fine.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on no surgery.
Yeah. Thank you. It's the one win we got so far. And again, I don't want to bitch too much, but it has been a very expensive year. So we'll see. Hopefully this dental thing will work out great. That's all I'm hoping for right now, is that the pre-Christmas dental thing will work out okay. Actually, I don't know this is off-air conversation. Do you have any housekeeping for this episode?
No, I was going to ask you if you'd seen The Mandalorian.
I have not. What did you think?
The first two episodes are out. I like it so far. It's not what I expected.
Is it like a crazy fun adventure story?
Not yet.
Okay. Is it shaping up to be a crazy fun bounty of the week adventure story? Or do you think it's going to have a lot of
over? No.
Oh, okay.
No. No. But I'm really digging it so far. Nick Nolte's great. And the best part is the first two episodes combined are 70 minutes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to continue. Like the first one was about just under 40, and the second one was about 33 minutes.
Oh,
that's... So I don't know if they're going to keep that length, but that's so great.
Well, and, you know, we often see... You know, usually, so network TV would be, what, 44-minute hours, something like that. Even sometimes even less than that, like 40-minute hours. So you'd expect an episode to be about 40, 44 minutes long, whatever. But with, like, an HBO show or, you know, a cable show, whatever, you're not restricted to that. So theoretically, you can go, like, some Sopranos episodes were, like, over an hour, right? Like, but they didn't do – but you never got the – You never got the other half of that where some episodes were 25 minutes.
Right.
Like, you always got the, oh, it's going to be at least an hour of your time.
Yeah. And
So it's nice sometimes to have.
Yeah. That's one of the benefits of a streaming show that nobody ever really seems to take advantage of, is the episode lengths could be anything.
Yeah.
If you can tell the whole story in 18 minutes, then... Do it. That's perfect. Great.
Exactly. Then bonus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If anything, that actually will enhance your show, because you probably get more people that watch the whole thing. It seems less daunting for sure. And you can maximize your number of episodes. Because, you know, now if you've got a Game of Thrones drama thing or whatever, where every episode is at least an hour long, or if not more, but you only have six of them because you can only film so much, right? But if you got a bunch of 18-minute episodes, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, I have no idea where the show's going. I'm digging it so far. But yeah.
I had a movie to ask you about. I don't know if you're interested in doing this, because we should. I watched two movies last weekend that. Well, okay, so not this last weekend, but the weekend before, I watched Midsommar, which I got from the library. By the way, this, if nothing else, this podcast should be sponsored by your local library. If they've got videos, you get to rent them for free, usually. You're already paying for it, people. Might as well use it. And they get new releases, too. So I watched Midsommar, which I don't know if you've seen yet, but
I have not.
I enjoyed it a lot. Don't want to tell you anything about it, but I enjoyed it. But I also watched a movie I got from the library called The Lords of Chaos, or sorry, Lords of Chaos. And it's a Rory Culkin movie about the Norwegian black metal and church burning murder things that happened in the 80s. And I had seen a really good documentary called Until the Light Takes Us. Have I inflicted on that that on you yet?
You have told me about it.
Okay. Well, I definitely need to make that available because it's a really good documentary that actually is about that whole thing and actually interviews the people that like the guy who was basically the bad guy in the story, the murderer slash church burner slash turns out to be like a really bad white supremacist kind of guy who is, by the way, out of jail now, because in Norway you can only be in jail for like, I think, maximum of 21 years or something. So even that guy who killed 77 people at the Jewish camp is only going to do 21 years because that's the maximum you can do. Maybe it's 15 years. Whatever it is, he's already out of jail. His name is like Verg Viknes or something. But he went by Count Grumshack or something. Anyway, but Rory Culkin does a great job. And the story is told from a very unique perspective. Not from a perspective that I was expecting. Because it's telling the story surrounding this with a person you don't get to hear in the documentary because, spoiler, he dies. Like, he's the murder victim. But it's a very interesting story. I mean, it's fascinating. And the aesthetic to me is great because I don't like that kind of music particularly. I mean, you know, heavy metal music, great, whatever. Loud, distorted music, great. But I'm not into, like, necessarily the whole, like, goth, death metal, black metal kind of noise for noise sake stuff.
Sure.
You know, again, it's, I want my heavy metal to not take itself very seriously. Although I have been, just on another tangent, I actually ended up on a, like a YouTube or Facebook video, hole watching, a couple Randy Rhoads live performances. And I forgot that actually, you know, Randy Rhoads is a pretty influential guitarist, but also Ozzy Osbourne's lyrics of his songs are actually pretty good. Like he's a sort of a clown, but, I mean, he, you know, it, again, Ronnie James Dio is what you would expect to have be like the Lord of Darkness, heavy metal singer.
Right.
But Ozzy Osbourne, you know, he just has a goofy grin, even when he's, you know, supposed to be like, you know, the Diary of a Madman or whatever. It's like, you got a bad 80s perm, dude. You know, and but your lyrics are great, you know, like they actually had, like, he was telling stories and coming up with thoughts that, you know, and again, I don't know how much of the lyrics he wrote on his own or whether he had like, you know, producers or songwriters or whatever that would do that for him or whatever. But made me appreciate Ozzy Osbourne a little more. I think you and I saw the Ozzy Osbourne concert that finally put the nail, I think, in the coffin of, yeah, this guy, his voice wasn't great. He was old and kind of fat, but, you know, whatever. Also, his stage routine involved a lot of jumping jacks.
Yes.
So it was like,
he needed to hire a choreographer.
Yeah, exactly. But even if you look at those, like, 70s Black Sabbath concerts, he'll be, like, in his big fringe jacket, which, of course, I love anyway. But, you know, in between verses, he'll just be like standing on the stage, like clapping along very energetically with the crowd. It's like, anyway. So at some point we should probably talk about Until the Light Takes Us and The Lords of Chaos, because I thought that was really good. Also reminds me, I told you about the movie Dig, right? The documentary Dig.
Yes.
We need to talk about that, because that those are two crazy bands.
Okay.
The Brian Jonestown Massacre and the Danny Warhols. So, if you're interested, I have thoughts about those movies. But yeah, I've been going back to Shudder a little bit, and I have resisted the urge to watch The Creep Show, the new version of The Creep Show anthology, because I'm afraid it's going to be bad. So see also Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone. Yeah.
You think that's going to be bad?
I think it was already decided to be bad.
Really? That's a bummer.
But here's two movies that I thought were interesting. First of all, kudos to boyfriend Jesse for recommending Child's Play, the 2019, I think it was 2019, reboot of the Child's Play franchise. You know, the only one that isn't actually made by the director-writer. And it doesn't star Brad Dourif as the voice of Chucky.
Yeah, I was going to ask who Chucky is in that movie.
Don't know. But as it turns out, it's actually, I really like what they did with it. I was put off a little bit by the actual Chucky design itself. But I thought it was actually very clever what they did. So I was like, thumbs up there. And then I saw a movie on Shudder called It Stains the Sands Red. And it's kind of a two-person zombie movie. One lady who's in the desert and a zombie that's kind of following her. And it is better than it has any right to be. I think it's worth your watch. It Stains the Sand Red is what the name of it is.
Okay.
And I think it's pretty short.
Is it like a horror movie, or is it like more of a thriller?
No, it's a horror movie. Yeah. It's a zombie movie. But a zombie survival type movie, you know. But it's pretty good. I kind of like it. And it's got some things going for it, I think. Like I said, it's better than it has any right to be. And just when I think, oh, crap, this is what this movie is going to turn into, it's like, yeah, it goes a little sideways. So I like that. But again, I don't want to oversell it because it's merely a 3-star movie. Being generous because I like horror movies.
By the way, the voice of Chucky?
Mm-hmm.
Mark Hamill.
Oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. I think I knew that at one point.
So I assume it sounded like the Joker?
Probably. But yeah, it was great. I mean, it's plenty of fun, let's say. So, highly recommended.
Nice.
Yeah. Better than Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. How about that?
Ugh. So mad. I had things I wanted to watch this week that I couldn't get to because I had to fit in two movies, one of which was that one.
Well, thank you.
And I have nobody to blame but myself.
Well, thank you guys for taking the bullet on The Iron Lady.
Hey, it was better than Frankenstein.
Well, I guess. I don't know. I will never have to find out. After listing to your guys' talking about it, was like, yeah, I love this. Is great. This is the one I advertise as Brother Jay and Drew, watch this so you don't have to. It's great. Hey, we provide a service.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think I better let you go because I got to work tomorrow. You probably do too.
I do.
Excellent. So, and I won't see you on Thanksgiving, but happy Thanksgiving.
And yeah, likewise.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's an uneventful day for you.
I hope so. And we will reconvene in 2 weeks to talk about another Mission Impossible movie, I think.
Oh, nice. Yeah. John Woo.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly the worst of them. We'll see.
Doesn't mean it's bad.
It's going to have some birds.
It's going to have some. It's got a motorcycle chase scene.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And lots of hair.
Yes, it does. Yeah. And, you know, he does his own stunts. It's great.
Tandy Newton.
Yeah. Yeah. everything we love.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.